is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 607 in the series. This session shares part of the Franklin Mass Town Council meeting held on Wednesday, September 15, 2021. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. Members of the Town Council, Town Administration personnel, the police retirement and promotion individuals, along with their guests and family members, were in the council chambers. Some members of the public participated in person, some via the Zoom conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. I've split the just about 2 hour and 45 minute elapsed time session into three logical segments. First, covers the opening, citizens' comments, police retirement and promotion. The break after the police ceremonies was excluded from this audio. Second, covers the three appointments, one license transaction, the Safe Coalition presentation by Jennifer Knight Levine, approximately 58 minutes. Third, covers the Delcott Invasive Species Update by Conservation Agent Jennifer Delmore, the Legislation for Action, Council Comments, and through to the meeting close, also approximately 58 minutes. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda. So let's listen to this segment of the Town Council meeting of September 15, 2021.
Okay, next on the agenda is another presentation, Delcott Conservation Area Weed Remediation. Jen Delmore. Oh, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we have another Jen. Anybody wasn't exhilarated by Jen Levine's presentation, we now get ready for weed remediation at the Delcart Reservation Area. But first and foremost, I think this might be the first time our conservation agent, who is not so new anymore, but is new here, Jen Delmore, I think it's been 2.5 years, I think, Jen?
Yes.
And I also want to, just for a quick inside joke, just mention that's been 2.5 years I have not received one single complaint from any elected official about the Conservation Department. And really, truly, as that may be a little joke, it really speaks volumes of the work that Jen has done since she's come here. Bill Batchelor and Jeff Livingstone and the rest of the members of the Conservation Commission frequently call me to speak so highly of the work that she's doing on behalf of the town. This is a presentation tonight by Jen that many of you actually asked for, I think, earlier this year. And so without further ado, Jen, take it away. Thanks.
Hello, it's nice to see everybody in person. Last year I was virtual. I think it was last summer. It was the last time I was in front of you guys, so it's good to be here.
Welcome.
I've got an update on the invasive species removal and the Delcott ponds. So for a little background, in 2015, we had the ecological management study done on the ponds, and they recommended two specific species to be treated in ponds 3 and 4. So basically, Solitude Lake Management has been doing the treatments, and ESS Group has been doing the monitoring with the goal of eradicating the two species in mind. We're currently on our fifth year. There's been two contracts, so they cover the permitting, treatment, monitoring, and the way the treatment and the monitoring works is they'll go out and monitor once or twice in the beginning of the growing season, and then apply a treatment, go out, check, see how it did. They'll go back and forth a couple of times throughout the growing season, and then we get a year-end report, usually in November. So these are the two species, the water chestnut and the variable milfoil. I'm not sure if you guys are frequent walkers out there, but I don't know if you've probably seen them, definitely less now. The water chestnut, you can still see some of it off of the floating bridge out there. I haven't seen the variable milfoil the last couple times I've been there. But if you're taking a walk, you can look for those. So reasons why we are doing these treatments, very important. So one, that they're when they were in full force, it was just a mat over the water. Sunlight can't get through. It's limiting oxygen supply to the fish. Native vegetation can't compete. And then, of course, boating and swimming and everything like that isn't doable with such dense mass of vegetation in the water. So the treatments that have been used are clear cast on the water chestnut, the diquats on the variable milfoil, and then actually this year they just added the Flumio Saxon to help with the uptake of clear cast to help with the water chestnut treatment, because that new chemical, the Flumio Saxon, is just, it kind of helps kill faster and prevent the seeds from dropping, which is the issue, because once the seeds drop and then they embed and they can be dormant for 10 to 12 years. So stuff now, you know, we've been working on this 5 years under contract, and if, you know, seeds were in there from 10, 12 years ago, they still have a chance to come up. So let's see here. So these two diagrams were from our year-end report, and I would just like to point out that around the edges of the ponds, where on the left side in June 2018, you see that the coverage, the yellow is sparse coverage, extends throughout basically that whole pond, and now on the right side you see the edges are totally clear, and then the orange, the patchy, is smaller, and the dense, which is the red, is also smaller. And then in the lower pond, we have less. I mean, that one didn't have the dense coverage as much in 2018, but the patchy and the sparse are smaller. So costs, it's been roughly, you know, $26,000 on average a year for total of $134,650 for the 5 years. We are coming to the end of our most recent contract. I believe they should be, let's see, I think they're done with the treatments. We're waiting on our year-end report at this point. And then I think they're doing one more treatment next year. And then the contract will be complete for our most recent contract. Here's some photos showing 2017 to 2021. So that's the water chestnut on the left. And then I'll just kind of highlight some of these points. So we've seen a decrease of about 6 acres from 2017 to 2020. The moderate to dense growth increased 0.7 acres in the last year, which is interesting. Overall, it's been effective, but you know, there's an area that's holding on. I imagine that year, you know, way back, who knows when it was, 8 years ago, the plants dropped a lot of seeds that year, and they, you know, chose this year to all come up, and that's why we have a year that's extra dense in a certain area. I could be wrong, but that's what I think is going on there. And then again, we added that Flumio Saxon chemical to help this year. And then the good news is that the variable milfoil was a success. So they no longer treat for that invasive species. They say, you know, they don't find it when they go out and do the monitoring reports now. So that is wonderful, because you know, one species out of the two in the original goal is taken care of, and the other one is the other one's on its way to being taken care of. I think that to stop treatments now would be a bad idea, because the seeds that are in the, you know, the seed bank are going to come up, and then slowly we're going to get back to a problem. So, you know, staying on top of it is necessary, but. It's definitely been working, and I think also considering newer chemicals that are coming out and are proven to work better is something to consider, where the contract is ending, to kind of reassess what chemicals work best and what work best should, you know, be on everyone's minds. But So yeah, I think that is the end, and any questions I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
Questions from the council. Councilor Hamblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Jen, for that. I'm glad that we have less milk. Was it milfoil?
Yes.
Because I walk around there with my dog, and it's just a beautiful area. I'm wondering, what is the idea of how to make sure that these invasive species don't get reintroduced into these ponds now that we've gotten rid of them?
That's a good question, because if the species are, say, in a neighboring pond, a few properties over, and an animal gets a hold of one, or a bird gets a hold of one, you know, and comes over to Delcard, and I think if that was to happen, and suddenly we started seeing, you know, more mats come back, the goal is to get it to a point where once, you know, we have it as clear, reasonably clear, mm-hmm. and then just staying on top of it. Once you see it start coming back, to get someone out and just hand pull it in a John boat or something before it becomes a bigger problem. That way you don't have to get back into the chemical treatments and everything.
That would be great. So can it be reintroduced off of boats? Like when people have put their boats in there, should they make sure they're washed off? And I think there's almost an educational process here that we have to go through for the public.
Right, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Jim.
Maybe having signage up saying you have to wash your boat properly, or have had washed your boat properly before putting it in the pond. I think that having a boat license requires you to wash it properly before moving it between ponds. I'm not sure everyone does that, but more signage would probably help. Maybe some educational signage on those particular species, so that if boaters are out there and they see mats of the milfoil or the water chestnut, we can say, you know, please, if you see this, let somebody know, let the conservation office know, okay. And they can grab some pictures.
That's a good idea. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilor Hamblin. Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for coming out and giving a presentation on this. I was actually curious about this, so glad you presentation. That's great to hear the milfoil has gone, because of the lakes in Maine where I used to frequent as a kid, and I do go up there from time to time. My family, the lake that we go to, had also suffered milfoil issues where it became a problematic for boating, gets trapped in the propellers and boats, and it's just not fun to swim in. It's bothersome weed, for lack of a better term. And I'm glad to hear that it's been, you know, eradicated for the most part. Delcard, I know the chestnuts are a little bit harder to get rid of, but great job on what's been done so far. As far as swimmability goes, my question is in regards to the chemical treatments. I know Delcard's not probably used quite frequently for swimming, but as far as the chemicals that are used for the treatment, what is their toxicity level?
That is a good question. I'm going to have to ask our guy over at Solitude to confirm that, because I've never seen anyone swimming at Delcart. I don't know if they do, but what'd you say?
No, he said no. I was just curious, only because I don't know if the goal is to actually make Delcart a swimmable location. It would be cool if it could be, because I know it's always been a bog. I'm correct, Tom. For many years, it's nice to see it getting cleaned up. I just would want to be careful with any toxicity levels.
We did swim in it 60 years ago.
You also used to swim in the old Franklin swimming pool, which is right next to the police station back in the day, too. And that's,
we all did.
That's, quite
interesting. That's a pleasure, certainly.
But it's nice to see it getting cleaned up. Thank you for coming.
Councilor Bizanti.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, through the chair. And I'm sure we all remember Lorraine Metcalf, too.
Yeah.
So, roll over.
Yeah.
I still hear that in my sleep at night. I guess my question through the chair to Jen, thank you very much for a wonderful presentation. I did get some feedback about the Delcarte Pond regarding, first of all, my first question is, are these weeds indigenous to the area, or were they like, did some guy from Florida throw a bag out the window and did it, and then it ran rampant and went viral, whatever? Is that an indigenous species to Massachusetts?
They're non-native. Most invasive species are non-native.
Right.
Yeah, they just, you know, exactly. They come over somehow,
and they
transported
just,
on some, yeah, something that someone was, I mean, boats, birds, animals. You know, birds are a big one, I think, that could, you know, they've got seeds all over them, and then they fly hundreds of miles. These two in particular, I think, with the original study, were pinpointed because they're so aggressive if they're left.
Right. Checked it.
Right.
And we've all heard the stories about Spanish moss taking over Florida and stuff like that. So the other question I have is I caught some chatter or some intelligence on Facebook about there's no more fish in Delcarte, so there's not as many fish in the Delcarte Pond anymore. Was that because of the treatments that we did to the weeds, or?
If you don't mind, Mr. Chair.
Sure, please, go ahead.
So they do monitor the dissolved oxygen each year. There hasn't been, the oxygen level in the pond hasn't dropped so low that it would create a fish kill. So I think that there's a long-term plan for Delcarte where stocking the ponds with fish is in the plan, but before we get to that point, we need to make sure that these species aren't gonna be a problem, because if they are, if the water chestnut and the milfoil are there, then the oxygen in the water won't be sufficient to support the fish that we're gonna end up putting in.
Right, and it's a follow-up question to that, and most of us were on the council at the time, Mr. Chairman, in my head. A previous Board of Health agent had spoken to us regarding how there was some, the Delcarte was being invaded by another species of fish, and then that was another problem they had to deal with, was like sterilizing that species, another invasive species of a fish or carp or whatever.
It was carp.
How did that go? Is that?
Yeah, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure about that one. I haven't heard anything on that. That was on, you said that was on Facebook?
There were people talking about not being any fish in on Downs
Brook. Oh, okay.
Now, I'm going back 4 or 5 years ago when there was some discussion about an invasive species of fish in Delcarte. So, I mean, that pond has really got it going on, I guess.
Yeah.
Jamie, you can speak to the carp question, I know.
Really quickly, let's correct Facebook. There are fish in there. They are invasive. And the intention and the long-term goal 5 years ago, when we started this whole project, was to do exactly what Jen and the Conservation Commission have done, which is get rid of the weeds and the remediation of the invasive species that we heard about tonight. And then we have to take a little bit of a new phase, a little bit of another phase, which is what Jen just mentioned, which is to maintain this status for a while, which I think the signage and the education is an incredibly good idea, and I wrote it down to talk to the DPW about. And then we have to go through, if the community wants, to actually go through another much more aggressive program and much more complicated program to actually get rid of the invasive fish, the carp, etc. And the goal always was to bring Delcarte Recreation back to a natural, pure state of what it really was originally before all these invasive species started flying around. And, you know, I think to Jen's point, and she just mentioned it, you know, because her vision's a little longer on this, which is great, which is if we get to that point, we can get rid of those invasive fish. You know, I think that the stocking the lake and talking with some professionals about what kind of recreational fishing opportunities may be there, you know, we'll certainly have that discussion at the right time. For
that
sure.
Would be,
I think
wonderful.
It's a great idea.
That would be,
yeah,
great.
I think it really would be wonderful if we could get some native habitat in there and have a bit of a passive recreation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield the floor.
Thank you, Councilor Bazanti. Councilor DeLocco?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I remember right, Councilor Bazanti, I think they were talking about they can't get rid of the fish, but they were going to put some down there to kill the eggs, and then the fish would naturally die off,
right.
And then we would be able to put the stock the pond. I think that's what I thought they were talking about years ago.
Mr. Chairman, I hear Brian saying yes next to me. So I believe that's the case.
It's around that, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Generally speaking, yeah.
Discussion.
That was, the intent was to bring the fish back to Delcott's. Councilor Pellegrini.
I can remember when they did start Delcott's because my son, we live on Pleasant, and would walk down there to fish. And Mr. Delcott, God rest his soul, he allowed certain people to fish there.
Four people.
So he had it open because he knew the people that weren't going to abuse it. That's the reason he did it that way. On another note, the beavers, they were creating such a problem down there for many, many years. They were building forts or whatever you call them, bridges, and blocking. And I know a neighbor that used to go down there and try to take care of things like that. Are we having problems with the beavers still? And are there any beavers there?
Yes.
I actually heard that Mike Madley at DPW just said earlier today that there's downstream beaver problems downstream from Delcott. At Delcott, there is a beaver mound, but I don't know if it's active or not. Mm. It's right after you cross that floating bridge in kind of like a little cove area. That's not the dam, you know, that's actually their home. So I don't know if it's active, but it probably is. I mean, if they're downstream, you know, if they're not too far, they'd be swimming up there, hanging out there, and then going building their dam downstream.
I'm sure that Nello Bassignani, who lives on Pleasant Street, it was right behind his house where this was. So if you ever have questions in that, you can certainly get in touch with him, or you can call me and I'll get you his number in that too, okay?
Okay.
Just for background.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Thank you for coming to me.
Thank you, Councilor Pellegrini. Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. Hi.
Hello.
I think Councilor Hamlin maybe have rubbed off on me a little bit. I see we're spending $27,000 on chemicals. Is there any non-chemical way that might just take longer to do this without spending the $26,000?
The non-chemical way is hand pulling. Dredging is just so much more intense if you were to go in with a machine and dredge the pond. Aside from dredging, the manpower for hand pulling and pulling it up onto boats, and that you'd have to have the correct boat.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much that costs, and I also would be curious to see if I know that in our year-end reports it says that the goal is to get it to the point where you can hand pull it. So I think that the chemicals were necessary at first to kind of, you know, give it a big shock for 5 years and get it to a point where it's manageable by hand. And then the chemical also, the plant uptakes the chemical and kills it before it can drop the seed. So I think that kind of guessing when it's going to drop the seeds that each year might be hard to schedule the hand pulling and.
Yeah.
It's a good question though, because redoing the contract, you know, looking into all those kinds of options, I think it's smart. See what's the best use of money and the best technique at this point, because I think the chemicals were the best technique 5 years ago. But
you know, it's good for people at home to know that even if it's just $27,000, but there's so many little things in the budget. That's why it looks so much. People gotta remember that we're doing a lot of little things.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilor Chandler. Jen, I'm amazed, first of all, sorry that you've had to stand there for a while. In your current condition. But thank you very much. Great presentation. We're looking forward to getting rid of the rest of the water chestnuts. And as soon as we can do that, maybe we can get Delcott's back to a fishable pond for all of us. So,
thank you.
Thank you
all. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Okay, next item on the agenda, subcommittee reports. I think the only subcommittee that has met is the EDC and Councilor Hamblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, the EDC met tonight. We had a discussion, just kind of a conversation about town branding and wayfinding signs. And we have our next meeting will be October 20th before the town council meeting on the then. Talk about more in depth about the brand town branding. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Hamblin. Questions for Councilor Hamblin? Okay, moving forward, legislation for action, resolution 21-53, gift acceptance, Franklin Public Library, $5,890, Veterans Service Department, $300, Fire Department, $200. Clerk will read the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is resolution 21-53, acceptance of gift for Franklin Public Library, Veterans Services Department, and the Fire Department. Whereas the Franklin Public Library, Veterans Services Department, and Fire Department have received generous donations totaling $6,390 to be used at the discretion of each respective department as follows. Donation summary is such. One, Franklin Public Library, a digital federal credit union of the DCU, $5,000 to support the library programs and services. B, Friends of Franklin Library, $890. Purchase of annual pass to Mass Audubon Society, purchase coupons to the Butterfly Place, purchase of books, support library programs and services. Two, Veterans Services Department, A, Roger and Caroline Prince, $100 for monument restoration project, and B, Terry Elliott, $200 also for the monument restoration project. Three, Fire Department, Joanne Spiegel, $100 for support of departmental programs and purchase and safety of other related equipment. Kathleen DeRuza, $100 for support of departmental programs and purchase of safety and other related equipment for a total donation of $6,390. Now, therefore be it resolved that the Town Council, the Town of Franklin, on behalf of the Franklin Public Library, Veterans Services Department, and the Fire Department, gratefully accept this generous donation to be used at the discretion the Franklin Public Library, Veterans Services Department, and the Fire Department as described above. This resolution should become effective according to the provisions of the Town of Franklin Home Rule Charter.
Move resolution 21-53.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion, Jamie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just obviously want to thank all of the donors for their incredible generosity. Councilor Jones already read all of them. I would just highlight DCU. Has now added the public library to their annual list of gifted donations, including the public safety departments. And what can I say about all the area of financial institutions and banks that we've seen here in the last few months? So thank you very much to all of them for their support of the town.
Thank you, Jamie. Well said. Questions or comments from the council? Councilor Jones?
Just a big thank you. Really, this is awesome.
Seeing no further discussion, the vote will come on the motion to approve resolution 21-53. A majority vote's required. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Bylaw amendment 21-875. Chapter 82, trash and recycling fee increase. Second reading. Clerk will read the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is bylaw amendment 21-875. Chapter 82, Municipal Service Fees, bylaw to amend the Code of the Town of Franklin, F Chapter 82. Be it enacted by the Franklin Town Council that Chapter 82 of the Code of the Town of Franklin, Section 6, Scheduled Service Fees, is hereby amended. Add underline text or delete as struck, subsection 82-6. Scheduled Service Fees, the department is Public Works. The fee is curbside trash for fiscal year 22 rate. Fee using 65-gallon trash and recycling carts will go from 278 to 286. Fee for using 35-gallon trash and recycling carts will not change at $212. This bylaw amendment shall become effective on and after September 15, 2021.
Move bylaw amendment 21-875.
Second.
Motion and second. Discussion, Jamie.
Mr. Chairman, so this is the second reading of the trash and recycling fee increase that the council discussed about a month ago. This will put the amount up to $2 additional per quarter. I just want to note from the memo and from Brutus's presentation, Derek's presentation a month ago, when you look at the curbside trash and recycling fee history, I just think it's important to point out that in 2005, the fee was $300. It's $14 less still today than it was 16 years ago. We all know this is a market-based program. I agree with all the comments from the council at the last meeting and the public. Nobody likes to be in this position, but I think the staff have done a marvelous job over the last decade and a half managing the costs and making sure that there aren't those big spikes in costs, and they've done a great job with the recycling program and all the other work they do down there. So obviously happy to answer any questions that folks have. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie. Questions? Councilor Pellegrini.
I see that, through the chair, fee using 35-gallon trash and recycling tabs, 212. Mm-hmm. What was the cost before that? You know how you're showing it that way for the 65-gallon?
That's not going up, so that's stable.
That's
it's
okay.
It's the same rate. So
you should have put probably 212 and then going to, 212, because that was hard to understand like that.
Okay.
All right, that's staying the same. We're going up the $8 on just the other. Thank you.
Exactly.
Thank you, Councilor Pellegrini. Councilor Bizanti.
Well, actually, Councilor Chandler had his hand up first, Mr. Chairman.
I called
him. Oh, no, you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, through the chair. So I don't have an issue with the $8, obviously not. We need to choose our arguments. I suppose my issue is with the trending of what's been happening in Franklin for taxes, fees, stormwater fees, taxes, fees. So, I mean, nothing goes down, folks. Everything keeps going up. And there's a certain arrogance out there that I've noted with people that I've encountered when they've made statements like, I want Franklin to be the best it can be. I want taxes to go high. I don't care about taxes going high. I want Franklin to be the best it can be. And guess what I say to that? I say, I agree with half that argument. I want Franklin to be the best it can be. But there's people who are not living off of trust funds, big, huge 401k plans, big, hefty retirement plans. There are people struggling out there. And if we continue this trend that's just going to keep going up, folks, and no one's going to convince me that a stormwater fee is only going to be $40 a house, because it's not, okay? My impervious coverage translates at my yard, and my yard is not the poster child, believe me, by far. I have a lot of impervious coverage on my property. But I will tell you, I'm looking at a $429 yearly increase, okay?
We're discussing bylaw amendment 21-875.
That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my issue is that I don't have a problem with the $8, I have an issue with the trend. So
understood.
I yield the floor, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilor Bizanti. Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. As the other councilor said, I actually don't have any problem with the $8. I don't think anyone does. But in our presentation tonight about this $8, I think there's something that's a really bad look for this town. At the DPW, we have a water superintendent, an assistant water superintendent, a highway superintendent, an assistant highway. And now, I couldn't find this in the budget. In our memorandum, it comes from the environmental affairs superintendent. Where did this person come from in the budget? Please, through you to Helen.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, it was in the budget. It's in the stormwater division that was created. And I don't have the budget in front of me, I can pull it up. I believe the budget was around 800,000. Barry, so we had the highway division.
Right.
You know, those various divisions, Councilor Chair, you just mentioned, if you look in there, there's that stormwater division where we reallocated, I wanna say 816,000 of personnel and expenses from other areas of the DPW where they were doing basin cleaning and other activities. The environmental affairs superintendent, that salary moved over to the stormwater division that's within the DPW budget. Just to make sure we're clear with everybody, there is no stormwater fee in the town of Franklin right now.
Right.
So it's in the town's operating budget.
But the environmental affairs superintendent, Derek Adams, his salary is in the town budget.
Okay, I just didn't see that line item, but it's on, I got it. So it's under the
DPW.
Just like DPW. Stormwater. So was actually that environmental affairs just changed from stormwater superintendent? I mean, I'm just trying to get a hold on where this
I think the official title is the environmental affairs superintendent. I believe that that's the title in the budget, but it's the stormwater division. Maybe there's some a couple of verbiage semantics there, but Brutus,
that,
I believe.
Is it something that you could check for us? And
sure.
Yeah, I just didn't want to say have people think that we created a brand new job.
Understood.
And raising their fees.
No question. Thank you, Councilor Chandler. And Jamie, if you would get back to us and give us that information, that would be good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. And any other questions? Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion to adopt bylaw amendment 21-875. Majority roll call votes required. Clerk will call the roll.
Tom, I wanted to say something.
Oh, I didn't see a hand up. Sorry.
Sorry, I don't have a hand. I only have a phone.
Oh, okay. Just identify yourself, please. Name
Teresa
and address,
Shea.
Please.
Teresa Shea, Franklin, Mass.
Go ahead, Teresa.
I just wanted to say, I didn't want to have to call in tonight, but I do have to address this discussion, the comment from Jamie Helen about the trash fee. Could I address that?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I want to say I agree with what everyone's saying about it's only $8 more for the trash. But here's the thing. I went to Jamie Helen's office a year and a half ago, and I told him that I knew that this trash fee was going to be increased. And I told him that I knew that we were having water and sewer bills that were going up, and then we were going to have watershed bills that were coming up for people, and that I was the one who went before the town council many years ago and said that we needed to look into the trash situation and make sure that this is what people can afford. And I was given that opportunity by Bob Valley, okay? Yes, at that time, the trash was over $300. And when he's saying that that we've done a great job of keeping this down so it's only $8 more, that is not the whole picture. The picture was we were paying $300. We did our job, we investigated and found out that the town did not have a designated trash account, that the money that was going into the account was being used for other things other than trash, and that they needed more money for that account. So what we did is we got the town to create a designated account so that it went to just trash. And that is why the rate came down, because the residents were now only paying for just their own trash. So that's number one. So he's wrong. Number two, he didn't tell you that I went to him a year and a half ago and told him that this trash fee was going to be coming as an increase, and that I wanted to help the residents not have to deal with this increase. And he looked at me and stood up with his secretary in her chair, and he pointed out to the windows and said, "You might want to help the people in this town, Teresa, but it's not your town, it's mine. And so I refuse to let you help." Okay? So that is how that went down, and that is why the residents are going to pay that $8 increase, because you have an administrator who did not want my help or a citizens committee to help the residents to keep this bill down. So you might say it's only $8, but to a lot of people that $8 is a meal, and Jenny Helen could have cared less. I just want to thank this council for being sensitive to this issue, but your administrator was not. And we wouldn't have to be paying this $8 right now if he had let me and citizens do the job we could have done for the residents of this town. So you all say you want everything to be better. Well, guess what? That administrator did not want it to be better for anyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further questions? Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion and clerk will call the roll, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Frangillo.
Yes.
Chandler.
Yes.
Assanti.
Aye.
Hamlin.
Yes.
Allegri.
Yes.
Jones, yes. Vice Chair.
Yes.
Chair.
Yes.
8-0, sir.
Motion carries. Moving on, Town Administrator's Report. Jamie?
Don't have anything, Mr. Chairman. All set. Thank you.
Future agenda items. Councilor Frangillo.
Nothing at this time.
Councilor Bazanti.
Nothing at this time.
Councilor Chandler.
Nothing at this time.
Councilor Hamblin.
Nothing at this time.
Councilor Pellegri.
The only thing I'd like to mention is the Davis Fair School. We're going to have, you're going to do that?
October 6th.
October 6th. It's on, it's on the...
You're good.
What's
the... We're trying to get as many of the things that were brought up good. In as we can and not be here till midnight.
Okay. We'll have coffee.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I just want to know what Councilor Pellegri is referring to.
Davis Fair.
Right. In what context?
An open house. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
In what context, Mr. Chairman? Through the chair.
Go ahead, Jim.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. I misspoke. So October 6th, we anticipate that the school department, school committee will be here for that evening to go through a couple of presentations, and Davis Fair was one of the topics that would be on that agenda.
Right. Go ahead. You're still...
Will they
still
be turning the school over to the town at that time?
They will not be. They have to vote themselves, and as I spoke, I think at the last meeting?
Last meeting.
Yeah.
They put out in their July meeting, they had a couple of meetings in July and August. I just forget whether it was a subcommittee or the full school committee. I believe they did both. The superintendent laid out the disposition plan, and they anticipate turning over the school in the vote at the end of the calendar year.
At the end of the calendar year is
so
what was stated.
To the town, and obviously I'm assuming there's going to be some legal paperwork to do the actual legal transaction, so that might take, a little while.
Okay, if we wait until the end of the year, is that going to cost us a lot more money than if we closed it now? Now meaning if they turned it over to the town.
I'm not sure.
All right, so I think the answer over to the town now, say next month, and not wait until January. Wouldn't that save the town some money?
Facilities are under the council.
Yeah.
So therefore, it will cost us no more money now, whether we have ownership or the school has ownership. The cost of keeping, the pipes from freezing still is in our budget. And it was before.
Okay. And one last question. Is there going to be an open house? That's what the residents had asked for. You're going to be able to go back in to see their school one last time as a school?
Mr. Chairman, as I've said numerous times, we will absolutely have an open house.
Okay.
I wish I could say tonight when it was, but
that's okay. As long as it's still in
the house. Yeah, we just have to coordinate that with the school committee.
Thank you.
Okay, future agenda items, Councilor Jones?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just one thing that came up to me during the cultural festival this weekend. I had some residents asking in regards to a discussion on having, and I did speak to Jamie myself on this at one point, but adding bike racks to the commons.
We can certainly put that on a future agenda as a discussion.
I have nothing at this time.
Councilor Bianco. Okay. Councilor comments. Councilor Chandler. Sorry.
I'm used to going on a little later now tonight.
Yeah.
Through you. First, I just want to thank all the people watching at home. The list has been growing. We've been getting so much more participation. I think that's great for everybody. Usually I talk about an email that I've gotten, but I didn't get any. I only got one email the whole week.
So this was a good week, nice and easy. But it was about the, you all got.
Just remember you asked for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
Please email me out there.
Brian, email.
But on a serious note, you all got that email, but some residents were upset that there was a group at the post office and they were handing out, I would say, some objectionable literature, obviously. And it does turn out that they have the right to do that, and people need to understand that. And as long as they're not causing a disturbance, you know, if they're ever blocking you when you're trying to get by, they can't do anything like that, but they're allowed to give out literature. And that's the only email I got, and that's my answer to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Chandler. Councilor Hamblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a few thank yous. I want to thank the presenters tonight. Also, everyone who built and showed up for the zucchini races at the farmer's market last Friday, and Councilor Frangillo for helping out. Saturday, the firefighters, the 9/11 memorial at the headquarters. The Franklin Cultural Council for the wonderful festival on Sunday. It was just amazing to see all these people just enjoying being outside and being around each other and learning a little bit about each other's cultures. And on your calendar of events, please put the Harvest Festival this year. We will actually have one. It will be on October 2nd from 12 to 5 p.m. There's a rain date of October 3rd. So the Downtown Partnership is very excited to have our Harvest Festival again. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Hamblin. Councilor Plegri.
Said everything I was going to say. So, ditto to you, and I'm glad that you remembered them all too. Thank you.
Councilor Frangillo.
Yeah, thank you. Beat me at the Harvest Fest. That's going to be fun. Make sure you're there. The idea of bike racks on the Common sort of is a future agenda item, in that we have already passed a complete streets policy, and the next step is to put together a list of priority projects for funding. There are a few things going on in that. One is at 6 o'clock on Wednesday, the 22nd, September 22nd, October
20th,
September 22nd, that's next Wednesday,
yeah.
At 6 o'clock here at the Chambers, we'll be having a meeting on complete streets. I will also be at the farmer's market this Friday with the DPW to meet citizens and talk about some opportunities for improving safety and accessibility of our streets around town. So those are a few ways to get involved. Please let us know, where are the places that you're struggling around town? Where are the places that you feel unsafe to cross the street? What's keeping you inside instead of jumping on a bike or walking around, you know, or wheeling around? You know, where are you uncomfortable if you use a wheelchair or a walker? Where is that difficult for you? Please let us know in whatever way you can. There are going to be multiple outlets to reach out to us. Cultural Festival was fantastic. I could not have been happier to be a leader of the town of Franklin on that day. I mean, it was 6 hours of, they estimated over 8,000 people, and the place was packed. Just everyone with big smiles, different cultures being represented. The entertainment was fantastic. The food was great, right? A lot of the food truck work that we have been doing showed out. The Shared Streets Grant, which allowed us to close down that street for the period and put tables and chairs out, worked fantastic. The brewery and winery, and the funding that we've been giving consistently to the Cultural Council and should continue to, all of this came to be this just absolutely incredible event. So kudos to everyone that helped make that what it was, especially the Cultural Council, and especially their chair, Kay Kelly. The last thing, and I don't know if I can do this in casual and councilor comments, but if you are able, Jamie, to answer some of the, just some of the questions about that downtown zoning study, cost of study to town, who MAPC is, and yeah, those are the two questions.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, very quickly, the study has been something I think we've all discussed at these meetings for probably 6-8 months. I think there was an appropriation back in June referenced earlier for $95,000. This is the first time the town has done a comprehensive zoning analysis of its downtown commercial district and C1 in almost 20 years. The last time was done in 2003. The Metropolitan Area Planning Commission is a highly regarded planning organization that does a phenomenal job in helping lead projects like this on behalf of communities to bring professional assistance. I can assure the public that these are highly educated people with very, very specific and deep backgrounds in transportation planning, public transit planning, zoning analysis, housing planning, density, setbacks, parking, the whole gamut. They are an extraordinary, credible organization, and the real beauty of MAPC is the organization is really a group of people. I could go out and buy a high-priced consulting firm at high rates, but with MAPC, they're a quasi-state agency where we get a very competitive rate for top-tier talent. The good news is, just to add on to that, Council for Jill, really quick, October 2nd at the Harvest Festival, MAPC will have a booth at the Harvest Festival with their staff. And at that, they are going to unveil a public website as well as some other public input sessions. We anticipate at least 2 or 3 where any member of the public can come out and salute, complain, give feedback, tell people what they don't like, they do like about downtown and C1, whatever public comments. There'll be public charrettes. And hopefully on that date on October 2nd, we anticipate that those dates will be scheduled later this winter, and this study is anticipated to go through the rest of the fiscal year. This is a very complicated project, and I think is the right time to do it, as all of you have felt, because we really appropriated that money to help work through some of these issues that we've all been discussing at EDC and at this council. And I think it's going to be able to provide a series of recommendations to the community to do some good work about what the next phase of downtown revitalization is going to be. So I have no doubt there'll be a tremendous public participation in it, and we look forward to it. That answer all your questions, Councilor Fajardo.
That was perfect.
Thank you,
James. Thank you, Chair.
He did a much better job. I was going to try and answer on the line.
Good.
He did a much better job. So, Councilor Bisanti.
Oh, thanks, Chairman. That's going to be a tough act to follow. The Cultural Commission. All I've got is a pancake breakfast at the Rocky It went great. We had 70 people show up for our first breakfast. I mean, we didn't have 8,000. At the end of the day, though, I want to say that some of the proceeds did go to Mission 22, which is an organization which recognizes the unfortunate suicide deaths of 22 veterans every day in this country. So some of the proceeds went there, and the guys in the kitchen always overcook, so we also bring stuff down to Gilly's house, which we did for the first time, and they were very appreciative. So pancake breakfast every second Sunday at the Running Gun Club. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Bisanti. Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just sad that my fellow council, Matt Kelly's not here to tell me that I'm probably going to talk way too long during my council comments and pick on me, so hopefully he's listening and call in and tell me to shut up. Because my comment really only tonight is to say that it was a pleasure meeting Shannon, and welcome aboard on helping out with the veterans. One of the things that we talked about last week, and I know it is moving forward, and I discussed this with you and mentioned it to you before that. We're hoping to, this was Councilor DeLorca and myself had a meeting with the VFW folks and discussed about property tax exemptions for our disabled veterans, and I look forward to that and moving forward for our vets. I did speak with the superintendent earlier. This is in regards to Davis Thayer. They did mention to me that it would be late December that Davis Thayer would be handed over to us. One of the common questions that comes up is what exactly do you plan on doing with Davis Thayer?
At the moment, the only answer I can really give to people who ask me that question is nothing at the moment, because we don't own it. You know, until the schools, the school department and the school committee actually vote to give us the school back in surplus, we don't have anything or say or have any way of even coming up with ideas as to what future purposes of the school is going to be. I think everyone has their ideas and their hopes and some useful purpose of Davis there. Myself being a little sad, because all of my children have gone through Davis there. My last child, unfortunately, didn't make it out. She was in the fourth grade. She had to get moved out. Regardless, she's enjoyed her time at Davis there. So there's five children through Davis there. It's going to be sad to see it ultimately not used as a school anymore. It's sad to see the windows dark, because I live across the street from it. But it is nice to see the Dean College students are back, if anyone hasn't noticed. So they're taking up a little bit of space at Davis there these days, but I did want to mention that about the cultural festival this weekend. What a tremendous, tremendous turnout. I think, Kobe, you coined it the best. It was just a remarkable event. And just seeing everybody come out and enjoy themselves on what had to be by far one of the nicest days that we've had in quite some time. It didn't rain, and it was beautiful temperatures. Everyone enjoyed themselves. And just having the community out and about and mingling with one another and seeing the many different events that were hosted that day and seeing that line across the street for those lobster rolls. I had to wait an hour and a half to get lobster. Like Dr. G. Talked to you about that when I was there. But that was just awesome. The music was great. The event was great. And I hope that continues. I do look forward to the Hops Fest coming up this fall. It's also going to be another great event for the Franklin Downtown Partnership. Other than that, I'm waiting for Matt to call.
I just called him and asked him to call.
I just
texted him.
Somebody else
call him.
But thank you for everyone coming out. Jen did a great job. Save Coalition. Himself.
Thank you, Councilor Jones.
Ah.
Councilor DeLarco.
Jesus, thanks. Franklin Cultural, that was awesome. Walking around, I said, we might need more food trucks next year, though, because so cut down on the lines. You know, it was that big. But I also want to thank Paul Fienza, because I went to the Historical Museum. It was a great presentation, excellent presentation on 9/11, the 2 weeks that after 9/11 that he was there. It was amazing, and he actually buried another friend a week ago that was on there, so he's still doing that, but it's going to be on cable TV. It's definitely worth a watch. It was pretty amazing. So outside of that, I have nothing.
Thank you, Councilor DeLarco. Okay. Just a couple of things. First of all, I always like to remark about having the police chief and the fire chief come in and do the promotions right here in the council chambers and acknowledge the retirement of some of our finest public safety people come before us. So it's always a pleasure to have them come in, thank the new appointees to the different committees. Shannon, welcome aboard. The presentations tonight, the Safe Coalition, we've all said a lot about that, and Jennifer just did a great job, and Safe Coalition's doing some great things for our community. People need to be aware that they're out there and there is help out there for our citizens. Please don't hesitate to call. Delcott Reservation, again, our conservation, the remediation, I think that's going along as projected, and I think we're on the right track here. Continuous thank you, the people coming forward with donations to public safety and our library. Those are always great things to have come forward. So, with that, I would entertain a motion.
So moved.
To adjourn.
Second.
Second.
Non-debatable. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nah.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.